This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. I'm hosting today, and it is The 10th Voice. It's a very special edition of The 10th Voice. Every second Saturday, I host the Sandra Moran Alphabet Soup Radio Book Club, and this is a radio book club bonus show because it's the fifth Saturday. And my guest here in the studio today is Robin Wayne Bailey. Very excited. Hi, Robin.
Hello, Linda. Linda. Boy, was that a mistake.
That's okay. I'm Linda's substitute on Woman's Song, so it's perfectly okay.
That was the last time I was in KKFI Studios with Linda Wilson.
She has been hosting a while, so a lot of people know her. But I'm looking forward to our discussion. First, we're going to have a little bit of LGBT news, and then listen to a song, and we'll talk science fiction and fantasy. I'm looking forward to it. Two big news items. One, the U.S. Navy has decided to name a ship after LGBT rights icon Harvey Milk. The U.S. Naval Institute website announced this on Thursday. It's a congressional notification signed by Navy Secretary Ray Mabus. And this is going to be the second in a new class of fleet oiler ships. So I believe that's a first, a naval ship named after Harvey Milk. Then the Log Cabin Republicans. For those who don't know, the Log Cabin Republicans are LGBT people who belong to the Republican Party. And the president of the Log Cabin Republicans, Gregory T. Angelo, made a rather unusual announcement. He said, moments ago, the Republican Party passed the most anti-LGBT platform in the party's 162-year history. Opposition to marriage equality, nonsense about bathrooms, and endorsement of the debunked psychological practice of pray the gay away. It's all in there. And he said he was as mad as hops. The Log Cabin Republicans have a long history of supporting the Republican platform, so I found this most interesting. We are an LGBT show, and I'd like to point out that the Democratic platform was inclusive, and many of the speakers mentioned gender identity and sexual orientation and gender equality. So there was a difference in tone and a difference in message. And next we're going to hear some music and come back with Robin.
That was June and Gene Millington singing about the apocalypse
of the Four Horsemen, and it seemed rather appropriate since our first guest today is a science fiction and fantasy novelist. He's a poet. He is a lifelong Kansas Cityan, and I'm talking to Robin. Robin, hi.
Hi, Elizabeth. I got that right this time.
And it's fine. If I'm called Linda Wilson, I take that as a great compliment because we work pretty closely together here at the radio station. So that is flattering to me. But I'm delighted to have you on the air. And I want to talk about the fact that I saw you last month, I believe, at the Writer's Place.
The Celebration of Queerness.
And you were one of the readers. And you've also been a member of the Fabulous Queer Writers. You want to tell a little about how you are active here in Kansas City as a writer?
Well, as far as the Fabulous Queer Writers of Kansas City goes, I've known Wayne Courtois for a long time. And many, many years ago when there was a gay and lesbian community center on Westport Road, we tried to start a writers group there, and the center closed pretty early, and that fell apart. Some time passed, and Wayne called up and said, would you be interested in a new group for gay writers in Kansas City, gay and lesbian writers? And we're going to call it the Fabulous Queer Writers of Kansas City. And it's been history since then. It's a good group of about 10 or so people, maybe a few more. They meet once a month, Or they did until the lighthouse has closed. I'm not sure.
Well, the lighthouse isn't closed.
Has not
but
closed
it,
yet.
It did close temporarily for renovations, and it is not closed. It's still very active here in the same location.
Good. It was a fine center.
And the Fabulous Core Writers did a number of public readings, too, at least, I believe, five.
I've taken part in several of them. The celebration of queerness that took place this past month was just an extraordinary event, I thought. It's a great capper for Gay Pride Month, and I was happy to take part.
And I think a lot of people don't realize your stature in the science fiction world. You founded the Science Fiction Hall of Fame. Is this correct, and could you tell a little about it?
I did, with the assistance of James Gunn at KU, a longtime good friend, and the assistance of the Kansas City Science Fiction and Fantasy Society. I had an idea for Science Fiction Hall of Fame, and KU has in place an organization run by Jim Gunn called the Center for the Study of Science Fiction. So I went to Jim with several members of the Kansas City fan group and said, let's talk about doing this and making KU and the Center for the Study of Science Fiction the umbrella body to give it the necessary impetus to launch. And we ran it at KU for, I think it was 8, perhaps 9 years, in conjunction with their Summer Writers Workshop and Teaching Institute. And about that time, Paul Allen, one of the co-founders of Microsoft, decided he wanted to launch a science fiction museum in Seattle. At that time, pretty much housing his own personal SF collection, like so many computer people, he's a geek too at heart. And they came to us and they said, we'd like to buy your Hall of Fame. And we had some discussions and we decided we would not sell it to them, but we would let them run it. And we have a legal agreement between KU and myself and the Paul Allen people. And it is now set up out in Seattle as the Science Fiction and Fantasy Hall of Fame, SF Museum and Hall of Fame, and it's going guns, and it's a beautiful facility. If you're ever out in Seattle and you're interested in science fiction, it sits right beneath the Space Needle.
It is a beautiful facility. And I wanted to ask you how you got started in science fiction, a little about your background. Did you read it growing up, and what was your college major, your degrees?
I always read it when I was a little kid, and I don't... Well, I guess I do know. My father used to work for the Burlington Railroad when he was alive, and that was near a paper mill. His office was near a paper mill, and they used to strip comic books like they do paperbacks, and they throw the comic book away. So every few nights, he'd bring comic books home, and I learned to read before kindergarten, and my favorite comics were always the crazy science fiction comics at that time. And so I got hooked early on. And then I discovered the North Kansas City Public Library. I grew up in North Kansas City in an area called Avondale over there, and went down to the library and eventually found the science fiction section there. And the rest was inevitable, I guess.
Well, and what happened in college?
In college, I took a creative writing course in college from a great professor named Craig Goad, and if you're ever out there and hear this, contact me again. And the first day of class, he walked in and said, now I want to see literature from you, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to see any of that romance crap or westerns or science fiction or any of that genre stuff. And I thought...
We're going to have some romance writers on the second half, so I want to say not that there's anything wrong with that.
And I thought, we're going to have a conversation here. And I wrote a story for the first assignment, and it was a science fiction story, and he gave me a C on it, and I thought, I can do better than this. And I turned around and I sold the story at 18 years old, my first sale at 18. And I came into class after I had the check and the contract. I had Xeroxed them. I just quietly set them on the desk beside where he lectured and said nothing. And he started lecturing, and he looked down, and then he paused, and he went on lecturing, and then he looked down again, and he turned around and started reading it, and goes, Mr. Bailey, see me after class. I could really do no wrong in the English department after that, selling my first story that early.
That's a stellar story.
There's one coda to it, though. About 10 years later, after I'd already published several books and a good handful of stories, I got a package in the mail, and it was from this creative writing instructor with a copy of his first poetry chapbook. Thank you
wonderful.
For teaching me everything I needed to know.
That's terrific. So what were your majors for your degrees?
I majored in English as an undergrad, and originally English and anthropology, but right just before the graduation they said, oh, you can't do this. We don't have a program for a double major in English and anthropology. And I said, look, I've been going here for 4 years, and you just now discover this. And they said, well, would you make one your minor? So I made anthropology my minor and English my major. And then I wanted to take my master's degree there, specializing in Shakespearean and Elizabethan literature.
Which is dear to my heart. I have 2 degrees in English literature. So.
That's a great background for writing science fiction and fantasy.
I can see how it would be. So how did you get started writing your first, I believe it's a trilogy, Frost?
Frost. Huh. That's a complicated story in a way. I sold Frost in 1982 to Simon & Schuster's Pocketbooks line. But the origin of it goes back to 1976, when the World Science Fiction Convention was held in Kansas City for the first time. And I listened to a panel discussion among 4 or 5 of the best-known fantasy writers at the time. And realized that there was almost no... There was one good example of a female fantasy lead character, and that was written in the 1930s by C.L. Moore, a character called Gerald of Jory. And those books are still in print. But I thought, I'm going to take a shot at writing a novel with a female lead character. And that became Frost. And it sold very, very well. The cover was absolutely gorgeous. One of my mentors came in and kicked me in the shins. And after 22 books, he had never had a cover like that. So anyway, the rest after that, 2 more books followed that. And now today, I continue to write short stories using that character. And at a certain point, there'll be a book of those short stories, hopefully within the next year or so.
That's a shame you had to start out with somebody tiny like Simon & Schuster. So we're going to take a break here. We're going to have some announcements, and we're going to come back. I want to talk some more to Robin.
What's the latest with solar energy for homeowners? Find out about tax credits, low-interest loans, and reduction in light bills on Echo Radio, Monday at 6 p.m.
This week, we're talking to uber atheist Sam Harris. These days, he's embracing spirituality, but he still thinks religion is the root of all evil.
People who are absolutely sure of paradise and absolutely sure that there's one way to get there are not, you know, part of your audience, and those are the people I'm really worried about.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. This is the 10th Voice. I have more questions for Robin Wayne Bailey, science fiction author. And the second half of the show, I have a taped interview with Karen Richard, Chris Bryant, and KB Draper, also authors. So this is the book club bonus show, and a good one it is. And Robin, we were talking about your writings and how you got started, and that you are still writing short stories. You're also doing some graphic work, is that right?
I do occasional comic work when I can and do it. It's sort of between the novels or the short stories, but it's fun to do. As I said earlier in the show, I grew up on comics, and I still love the medium.
And I have to admit, when I was little, would tend to read Casper the Ghost and Archie.
I'm wearing a Felix the Cat t-shirt.
Oh, all right. I knew we had a lot in common. I loved Felix the Cat. Well, I wanted to ask you, too. I once walked into a mystery bookstore and was looking for recommendations. And the owner said, well, do you like cozies, police procedurals, thrillers, true crimes, steampunk, noir, true, you know, comic. And I kind of looked at her and I said, well, I don't know. These are the authors I like. But I haven't read a great deal of science fiction, and I'm realizing there are a lot of subgenres in that field, too. Just some I've noticed are comic, horror, feminist, lost world, post-apocalyptic, space, steampunk, you know, which is also in mystery. But then there's also an umbrella term called speculative fiction, because I had an author say, no, I write speculative fiction on the fantasy side. And she mentioned that there was magical, supernatural, animal, heroic quest, and I realized this is far more complicated than I realized. Again, it's not really my area. I've read some, and I've read some classics, and I'm going to be reading more because I want to feature some science fiction on the book club. But how complicated is it?
It's really not complicated at all. People make it, I would say librarians and academics and maybe marketing people make it much more complicated than it really is. I did a workshop about 5 years ago, and the head of the Chicago Public Libraries was there, and she very diligently told me that they divided their science fiction collection up into 17 categories. And I'm like, okay, I'll sit here and listen while you recite them and describe them to me. And I basically cracked up laughing when she got to vampire cozies. And I thought, okay, what are vampire cozies? Well, these are vampire books that are designed to make you feel good, where you fall in love with the vampire. And the vampire is really a good guy, just a tortured soul. And I thought, okay.
So how many subgenres can fit on the head of a pin?
There you go. I tend to think of it all as imaginative literature, if I have to give it a label. I just explained to the students at a writer's workshop in Gunnison, Colorado, that I shy away from the title of science fiction writer, in fact, because I write a little bit of everything. All literature at its root is imaginative literature, that my work contains more fantastical elements sometimes is because that's where my audience is right now, and that's where I make my money, and I make a living at this. I'm pleased to say I'm knocking on wood. But basically, I think if you enjoy science fiction, you're going to enjoy, if you enjoy stretching your imagination with a good science fiction book, you're going to get that same satisfaction, I think, from almost any of the other so-called subgenres of science fiction. It all depends on how well the book is written and the skill that the author brings to his story.
I would have to say that's the best definition and explanation I've ever heard.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that
your
was...
check is in the mail.
Again, I'm a volunteer host at KKFI, but that was concise, and it made perfect sense to me. And there are authors that are fantastical, or you know, more science fiction, and I've thought, well, maybe I do like this genre, and you've just explained why.
I think if you don't like one particular book, you can't dismiss science fiction as a whole genre simply because you got a bad book that didn't resonate with you. There is something out there that will resonate with you, whether it's, you know, if you're gay or a lesbian, you may find the works, you may not care for the works of Robert Heinlein, for instance, kind of a hard tech 1940s, 50s science fiction, but the works of Octavia Butler, for instance, might rock your world in a way you would not expect.
And she's fascinating to me. I'm going to read. She's one of the authors I'm planning to read
Octavia
for the book
was a good
club.
Friend.
Really? You knew Octavia?
I came into science fiction at a kind of unique moment in time where I was able to meet all the great names in science fiction that I wanted to. Robert Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov, right on down to certainly Octavia Butler, and many of the really great names of science fiction. And I'm happy to say I called them all my friend at some point.
Wow. For those who don't know, she was feminist. She was a black author, and people don't think of someone a woman like that going into science fiction. And I have friends who majored in women's studies who have told me you have to read Octavia Butler.
She was also a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient.
I did not realize
and
that.
And most people don't think of science fiction writers as being MacArthur Genius Grant recipients, but her writing is amazing. And if you haven't discovered her yet, I can't recommend her enough.
That's wonderful. And I should probably explain that the MacArthur Awards, you cannot apply for them.
Right.
They are bestowed. And another lesbian writer who recently received one was Alison Bechdel. And, of course, her play is musical is running on Broadway. I'm so impressed that you knew Octavia. Did you meet Ursula Le Guin?
I have met Ursula tangentially, basically. We've done some panels together, and I see her at some conventions when I go to the Northwest Coast. But she doesn't travel a lot, so I haven't had the opportunity to spend mucho time with her, and I would love to do so.
A writer who has been recommended to me for her trilogy, and again, this is not really my area. I'm looking forward to learning, is Catherine Wilson. Are you familiar with her?
I am not, particularly these days in publishing. It gets harder and harder to meet all the newer writers that are out there.
And she's more, I believe, in the lesbian world, but you brought me to a very interesting topic, and that is publishing. You entered with Frost, what, 1983?
I sold it in 1982. It appeared on the stands in 1983.
How has publishing changed, and are there publishers specifically devoted to science fiction? I keep seeing the name Tor.
Right. How publishing has changed. A lot of people think that, ebooks and self-publishing have really changed the nature of publishing. But in fact, publishing is always in flux. And, you know, people talk about self-publishing and Amazon being a ground change in publishing. In fact, the ground beneath publishing is never still. It's always in flux one way or another. When Frost came out, Frost had a print run of right at 100,000 copies. You never see that with a book these days, largely because of some IRS rulings that were made in the mid-80s. And so the size of print runs have changed. The way that publishing purchases books has changed. Editors no longer really buy books. Books are bought by committee. An editor may say, I really like this book, I'd like to publish it, but he has to take it to marketing, he has to take it to legal, he has to, a whole committee of people have to ring off on the book before it's ever purchased.
And that was even starting in the 80s. I should mention that Calvin and Hobbes had been turned down by a focus panel at a major syndicate. And that's how the Universal Press Syndicate, where I worked, acquired Calvin and Hobbes, because we didn't have a focus group. We had editors look at it and go, hey, we really like The Boy and His Tiger.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad that editors aren't playing that role, because editors are intelligent, informed readers. And you are an editor as well, isn't that true?
I edit anthologies and collections occasionally, yes. I have a new anthology coming out in March next year. You had mentioned comic as one of those subgenres. This is a humorous collection of science fiction stories called Little Green Men Attack. And I wish I had brought a piece of the cover art. The cover art is just gorgeous. If anybody ever tells you not to judge a book by a cover, you should be aware that people do it all the time.
They do.
And a really bad cover can sink the best book in the world. But Little Green Men Attack has a marvelously funny cover for it.
I look forward to seeing it, and I heard a presentation at the Golden Crown Literary Society a few weeks ago on cover art and its importance. And it's certainly one of the criteria I use, particularly to not read a book. there's some wretched covers out there.
There are wretched covers, yes.
And as an editor, do you consider yourself more of a content editor or a line editor or a copy reader or a copy editor or all three?
Well, particularly when you're doing anthologies. And I have a co-editor on Little Green Men Attack, and we both break up all the duties. We acquire the stories together. We each go over them for line editing. He's a really good line editor. His name is Brian Thomas Schmidt. And I still go over them, and I take an eye line by line, too. And then we decide together which stories we're going to buy for the anthology.
And you mentioned self-publishing. I know some authors who self-publish, and their works are wonderfully written. They're gifted writers. The design is good. The cover art is good. But then there's a lot out there that it should have been seen by an editor. And is this true in the science fiction world that some of the self-publishing probably should not have seen the light of day without editing?
I don't know if I want to make that kind of a,
without mentioning any names, of course.
Yeah, self-publishing is a good thing and a bad thing. I use self-publishing for my backlist. If I write a story that comes out in a magazine this month, a year from now, you're not able to find that story. So most magazines let you revert your rights after a year, and I make sure that my contract says I can anyway. So after that year is up, I will self-publish that story, put a cover on it, put it out on the Internet, and the story will continue to earn money. That's
well, and I'm honestly not talking about established authors. I'm talking about someone, for instance, in photography who has a camera phone and takes a snap, you know, and says, oh, now I'm a photographer, mm-hmm. you know, or someone who has a camera and says, now I'm a filmmaker. I'm talking about that kind of thing.
Then it becomes very much a crapshoot. The problem with self-publishing is that anybody who has a computer these days and wants to be a writer really can. It becomes kind of easy on a computer to sit down and produce 350 pages if you're determined to do it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that because you can write a sentence, you understand pacing, or you understand plot.
Or point of view.
All the other things, or point of view.
Continuity.
All the other things that make a book good and readable. The problem with self-publishing, I found a number of good books that I enjoyed reading a lot. There were self-published books that had never seen any editorial eye other than the writers. But those are almost lightning strikes compared to the stuff out there that is not quite so readable. And the problem with ebook marketing is that you as a buyer don't really know how to evaluate a book, whether to buy it or not. Maybe it has a good cover on it. The person who wrote the book has bought a cover from some artist or managed to create a good cover. But you don't, when you go into a bookstore, before you buy a book, particularly these days when a book runs you $25-$30, you know, you have the opportunity to read over it, look at it. And I think it's a different buying experience than buying online, where it feels very much like a game of literary roulette. You don't know what you're going to get.
I think that's true. And I do still like walking into an independent bookstore and browsing the shelves. And that's how I found some wonderful reads. But the thing about picking a book, I sometimes look at awards lists. And you've won quite a few awards. Isn't that true?
Actually not. I've been nominated for a number of awards and received a Missouri Distinguished Author Certificate with Mel Carnahan, but
that's pretty impressive.
But I don't.
You were a Thorpe Men finalist.
I was a Thorpe Men finalist for Shadow Dance. Seems like a very long time ago, but it was fun. It was an honor. But I don't pursue them the way maybe other writers do. And another SF writer one time, named Jerry Pournelle, popular military SF writer, once told me that money will get you through times of no awards better than awards will get you through times of no money. And I'm very commercial about the stuff that I write.
What an interesting quote. Well, and besides, I'm veering out of the book area mostly, but for instance, the Pulitzers. If you're with a tiny paper, you know, your chance of winning a Pulitzer are reduced over if you're with, you know, an East Coast, West Coast major metropolitan daily, or, you know, your Roger Ebert, or it's just probably not going to happen. And it has nothing to do really with merit.
Visibility is everything in any kind of an award situation, I think. You know, people talk about, well, this award system is corrupt. let's change it. But in point of fact, all award systems are subject to corruption. Everybody campaigns for them. The most popular people, whether it's in movies, television, or the politics,
or presidential
people.
Campaigns.
Right.
Well, what are you working on now?
I have a story due August 1st for Marion Zimmer Bradley's Darkover series. Those books are still going on. So I have that on my typewriter right now. I'm also 12 chapters into a new novel called Swords in the Storm. It's a fantasy novel, and that's devouring my time pretty much right now.
Well, I hope you'll come back. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
I would love to.
I would like to know how someone could reach you or find you.
I can be found on Facebook at Robin Wayne Bailey. And I have two pages on Facebook. In fact, one of them is strictly a professional page for announcements of upcoming books, projects, appearances. The other is a little bit more freewheeling, you know, if I want to discuss politics, which I don't do too often, but I do. Or anything goes on that page, and it's open to the public. Come look me up.
Sounds good. And do you have a website?
I do not currently have a website. I let it go. Websites are almost kind of antique, and I don't really skills to keep it up.
Yes, I would agree with both. I thought it would be fun to write a blog, but turns out I don't have a lot of time to write a blog. Well, thank you so much for visiting. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think this is one fabulous book club bonus show, so I'm going to do it again.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And we're going to do some announcements now.
Michael, my nephew, who still has a lot to learn, wants to know what's on the next Arts Magazine show.
Then let's teach him about the Unicorn Gala. And guests from the Unicorn will be here to talk about just that.
Will there be music from La Caja Phil?
Oh, I'm sure there will be. Then later, folks from the Lawrence Opera Theater will be here to talk about the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth.
Why, that's 2,800 in dog years.
That's Monday at noon, Arts Magazine Show.
Outcasting, LGBTQ Youth Radio. Looks at the anti-LGBTQ backlash since the Supreme Court's 2015 ruling on marriage equality. On Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
Welcome back to the 10th Voice. This is Elizabeth Anderson. And next we're going to have an interview. The author Karen Richard was in town for her work. She was speaking. And we have local authors, Chris Bryant and KB Draper. And this was on a Wednesday evening. I did an interview with them. We had all returned from the Golden Crown Literary Society Annual Convention in Alexandria, Virginia, and that was the first week of July, and so much of our conversation revolved around books and hearing authors, panels, readings. So I hope you enjoy this interview. Hello, this is Elizabeth. We're back with the 10th Voice, and I am here with author Karen Richard, visiting from Baltimore, local author KB Draper, and other local author Chris Bryant. So hello.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
And we all just came back from GCLS in D.C. about a week and a half ago. So what I'd like to start out talking about is how GCLS was for you this year in Alexandria, Virginia. Karen, would you like to start?
Sure, happy to. This was my second time attending GCLS, but the first time I was able to attend as a published author. So it was a profound difference, I think, because I got to participate more in panels. I was able to do one reading and participate in a panel on humor and then present a workshop on self-care for writers with Beth Burnett. So it was a real different experience being an active participant as opposed to just an observer. And then I got asked to sign a couple books, which was a rush, first time that ever happened. So I bet you guys know a little bit more about that, yeah.
Yeah, so this is my second time as well. Last year was just soaking it all in. It was my first exposure to really everything, authors, the event, the whole conference, you know, the, all of it. And so this year it was a little different. It was a whirlwind because we, it was a last minute decision by my buddy over here, Chris. And, you know, with everything going on and all the events and conversation, how Sandra was going to be involved in, and memorialized, I guess. We just really wanted to be, I really wanted to be a part of it. And when Chris said, hey, you want to go, I jumped in. So this was really short, trip. We went in on a Friday and came home Sunday, but it was really amazing because I met some new people that I had good connections with. I laughed a lot and just had some great interactions, more personal this time, I think, as opposed to the first time just staring at people going, oh, I know you on Facebook. And now I actually had some real human connections, so that was great. And then obviously all I got to see Cheryl, and that was amazing. And it was just a lot more personal this year than it was last year.
Yeah, this is my second time. Like KB said, we showed up on Friday afternoon and left Sunday morning. Basically, I attended a lot of the readings, and that's, I actually heard Karen read, and it was fast and furious, and got to see new people or meet new people, and got to hang out with my old friends, and it was a great experience. I loved it.
And I was there longer this year. Got there Wednesday morning, left Sunday morning. Last year I was only there for 2 days. So, you know, I was meeting people and trying to get the lay of the land and figure out what GCLS was. So it was nice to come in and go to so many readings and hear so many panels. It was such diversity of topics. What I want to ask too, Karen, you first, is what was a highlight for you of GCLS?
That is a great question. There were so many things that I really enjoyed, but I have to say that I think the highlight for me of the entire time was the reading that I got to do. I was sitting next to Lee Lynch. I mean, it's so rare that someone that you admire and look up to, that you are able to meet that person face to face, but then to actually do a reading. And one of my Facebook pictures now is me literally handing the microphone over to her to answer a question. And it's just such an awesome experience to think that someone that really made it possible for us to do what we do, for LesFic to have the availability that it does now, it really all came from someone that I got to sit next to and listen to do a reading. So I think that was pretty much the high point for me. Although there was a lot of other good things too, but I think that one was the best for me.
I'm going to have to smarten up my answer set next to this one. That was really amazing. There was a lot. I think some of the friendships that I walked away with, that's really special. I really walked away being extremely motivated after the keynote speaker. And just that reminder that there is that history that I think I take advantage of a pretty easy lifestyle. You know, I've had it extremely easy in my life being a lesbian, and I've been very successful, and it's never held me back. But realizing that's not always the case, we need to stop and appreciate that, where it's come from, and all the women before us that had to fight for that. So I thought that really sent a message home with me going, you know, I need to, you know, appreciate where I come from. And also, don't take things for advantage. It's not always going to be that way, you know. And so I think that was my highlight, walking away pre-motivated. And Faye was an amazing speaker. You know, she was very engaging and funny. And for her to send a message with such a tilt of humor, she had me, yeah, totally crushing on her, for sure.
The highlight for me was probably when Beth Burnett told me I'm the best hugger. I had just a great time the whole time. I stayed up for 36 hours because I had to jump from friends to friends to friends. It was great. I loved the award ceremony. I loved meeting Cheryl, and I loved meeting Sandra's mom. That was really special. It was great to hang out with my friends. I see my friends twice a year, and even though we talk almost daily in text, it's just nice to actually hang out with them and see a lot of them win awards at the ceremony. This time I didn't cry like a baby like I did last year. I was better this year. It was a fantastic time. I had no regrets. So maybe I didn't get a lot of sleep, but I made up for it on Sunday. We got home early, and I'm pretty sure we both crashed.
This is Elizabeth, and I would have to say one of the high points for me, besides the panels and the readings and the speeches, was meeting so many Facebook friends that I was fairly sure they were real friends. Carol Rosenfeld, Lori Egan. I met Cheryl Head for the first time. And a highlight for me was getting to have lunch with Jewel Gomez and Michelle Carlsberg just by happenstance. Amazing. And then to see a panel with Karen Kallmaker, Marianne K. Martin, Catherine V. Forrest, Lee Lynch, it just blew me away. That is not the kind of conglomeration you can find just anywhere. I want to ask, too, Karen, you mentioned that you were a published author for the first time. So let's hear about your book. And then, KB, let's hear what you're working on. And, Chris, then you.
Yeah, I published my first book with Gus Press, which is a high five, which is a division of Bedazzled, Inc. It's called Women of the Year, and it's 12 short stories, one set in each month. I read from the April story. Yeah, everybody laughed at the right place, yeah. And so that was a good reading. And the book itself is really 12 different characters. They're all lesbians at different points in their life, at different points of being out to themselves, to other people, all different ages. And it just plops a woman down in each month and says, what happened in this month? So the January story is about, it's called 42 Years, and it's about the 42nd anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. So I tried to do some politics. There's a little bit of humor in there.
Quick question from Elizabeth. What's this about a DBAP?
Yes, well, that is my homage to Sandra. I was part of the Writing Academy, and Sandra was one of the instructors for the inaugural season. And, of course, she was doing her DBAP presentations, the Dead Body Action Plan. For anyone who doesn't know what a DBAP is, I don't know how you could not know, but the Dead Body Action Plan, where Sandra would be out running someplace and decide to pause and film herself saying, that would be a great place to hide a dead body. If someone did, let's review the steps. You gasp, you step back carefully in your own footprints, you move people along, and you call 911. So I did write a story called DBAP, which posited a future in which Sandra was producing these PSAs on DBAPs on logo, and it sparked a whole industry of Moran Tech DBAP kit, neon purple taped, crime scene tape that says nothing to see here, move along, keep moving, and just a little short story that was sort of an homage to the humor that she brought to so many of our lives, and that was really my nod to everything that she was able to give me.
And rumor has it from Beth Burnett that you're working on a super secret project. So you are still writing. Is this correct?
Yes, I actually am. I came home from GCLS jazzed as well. And I'm working on a novel that picks up one of the short stories, the August short story, a couple years later. I thought there was some more stuff to do there with the characters. I have a secret agent special dragon project going with Beth Burnett. We're going to collaborate on some stuff, and I don't want to say anything more about that except that it's just in the very early planning stages. Beth is a fantastic friend and a fantastic author, so we're going to have a collaboration. Hopefully it'll be done and we'll shop that around to people. But yeah, that's the thing about coming back from GCLS is even if you kind of hit a lull in your writing, after you're surrounded by all those creative people and all that creative energy, you just want to start writing again, no matter where you are in your process.
I have two things going on right now. We're finishing up Stand In, which is the third book in the Candy and Dalen series. I'm rewriting that. I decided to go in a different direction because someone, we won't say who, but it starts with K and ends with Risk. And she thought there should be a little more heat, and I think you used some different words, so I'm rewriting, going a little bit quicker direction. It's the same direction that the two characters are going, but we're just going to get them there faster, get them, you know, in that U-Haul a little quicker, I guess. And then I have the last few edits to a new series that's going to be a trilogy. It's Demon Shemans, and I'm in the last few pages of edits of that, and then I've got to get it to the official editor to take care of that and clean it up and make it pretty.
I'm working on Page Proofs for Taste, which comes out in October. I'm very excited about it. It's my favorite so far. My book, Forget Me Not, is due here in a couple of weeks, so I'm finishing that up, and that comes out in April. And then after that, I have an erotica that started. So I decided to cross over a little bit just to see if I like it, and so far I like it. So
I think the important question is it first person or third person?
It'll be, I don't know. I haven't decided. I can go either way, but right now it's first.
And the next question, an author who was at GCLS, and I believe she's Bedazzled as well, she put a question up, I believe yesterday on Facebook, asking about self-published versus being with a publisher, and also wanting to know how to market or publicize a book, whether you're with a publisher or self-published. And Andy Marquette made an interesting point that whereas mainstream publishers used to have copy editors, cover designers, etc., with a lot of publishers today, the author still has to do a lot of publicity herself. So what do you do for publicity?
Whatever I do, I'm not doing enough of it because actually my publisher said sales are flat, but short stories don't sell a lot. So I'm really happy with getting them out there and really happy with the response I got, especially at GCLS. What I did is I did Women in Words. I see you have the t-shirt on. I did a Women in Words when it first came out. I got it on all the lists of books coming out in May, coming out this month, and things like that. I also publish it on my Facebook page. I try to have my personal Facebook page and an author page, and that doesn't work for me. I can't be me and then not be me, and I was answering questions under my real name that were for my author. So I consolidated, and now my Facebook is just under my, everything is under my author page. I find it's easier to engage with people that way. I wrote a short story for Women in Words that I just put up there, and I had a link to the book in there as well. It was just a giveaway short story about, it's called Tar Heeled. It's about the North Carolina bathroom law. It's pretty intense. I wouldn't, not humor in any way. There's nothing funny about it.
This is Elizabeth, and I read it, and it is intense, but it's real. I don't want to give it all away, but I could picture this happening to someone who's accosted and just trying to defend using a restroom. I thought it was very well done.
I think you just gave it away.
Well, that's okay. No, that's okay. It's, I think you say it's about the North Carolina bathroom law, and everybody pretty much knows what's going to happen. And I don't know if you guys were there for Rachel Spangler's address at GCLS. It was really good. But one of the points that she made was it's important that we continue to have our community, because when you have a North Carolina bathroom law, it's not transgender people necessarily that are going to be impacted by that law, because you don't know somebody's transgender necessarily all the time. The people who are going to be impacted like that by that are butch-looking women. And I'm not the butchest person in the world, but I get sideways looks when I go into a restroom in a public place. I always say, you know, I just like my character in the story, when I go into a bathroom in the airport, for example, I thrust my chest out and lead with the girls. Yeah, yes, I am a girl, because I have short hair, and I have a deep voice, and I wear a baseball hat a lot of the time. So, you know, those are the kinds of experiences that colored that story that I wrote, and I was so mad when I read it. And I think Rachel's point is really well taken, that even if you think that law doesn't apply to you because I'm a woman and I use the women's bathroom, it doesn't mean someone else isn't going to try to apply it to you. And we can't ever rest on our laurels. We can't ever say it doesn't impact me, so it doesn't matter, because it does matter.
And KB, what do you do to get your books into the hands of readers?
Street corners, cheap liquor. No.
Keep your hands in something else.
Yeah, all right. Books. I got thrown off by the bathrooms. Yeah, so I do a lot of events, a lot of the same things, you know, and making the connections. I've seen most of my success is when I can actually connect with a person personally, and that's through events. We've had several local events, this radio station, GCLS, friends, a lot of Facebook, tweet, all that fun social media.
Didn't you give away or discount your book, the first one, when the second one was coming out? Because I think I bought the first one, and that led me to buy the second one.
Yeah, that was one of my tricks. Probably we'll see that one, the third one. I'll give that second one away. I read something a long time ago, or when I was getting into this, what it seems like a long time ago, is, you know, you really get the momentum after, like, the third, fourth book. And so that's the importance of continuing to write and just getting your name out there. And if you can catch them with anything, then, and if they like you, they'll go back to the beginning. So the first sale, I've had amazing success, especially for an indie, with U-Haul Diary. I think it struck a lot of chords, you know, people. I've had numerous Facebook messages, or anyone I've spoken to that's read it, it's like, that was me, I had that story, I dated that girl, you know, they even asked, did I actually date that girl?
What was her real name?
Was she tall, was she blonde? You know, and then some have connected, you know, with the series, looking for, you know, more action series, and then they've gone back and read the other stuff. So my plan is just to keep writing, and as long as I enjoy it, and a lot of, you know, people seem to enjoy it, I'm going to keep doing it, and I think it'll connect, because I've seen the attention and absolutely the name recognition.
And Chris, what about you? How do you make sure readers see your books?
Bold Strokes, who I write for, they actually do a lot to promote our books. They tweet, they post it on Facebook, they go to Deal of the Day. They have a Deal of the Day now that they've been doing for the last few months, where they will pick a book and offer an ebook version of it for $2.99, and that's kind of cool. I really like that. They send flyers. They do everything for us, and what I do is I kind of keep I kind of have a little bit of a fan base now that I've have a couple of books under my belt, and I will write a little snippet about it or say, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm working on, you know, I need gummy bears or whatever, and it works, and people are interested, and they get excited for when the release date of whatever book is. And so I think Facebook really helps a lot of writers, and it's certainly has helped me.
Yeah, Teaser Tuesday kind of thing, where you put a little bit of your work in progress out and to get people buzzing.
And I know that I have found some writers because they do write blogs, and I look at the blog and think, wow, this is really well written. So I go looking for the book. And same thing with Facebook posts. Sometimes I'll see extremely thoughtful Facebook posts and think, hey, I want to check this writer out. So it doesn't have to necessarily be something real official or structured. I do think social media is a wonderful venue. It's what I use primarily to get word out about the Santa Moran Alphabet Soup Radio Book Club. I am reading a lot of books, and sometimes I look at award lists. GCLS, I was listening very intently to the author readings, and I did come home with a stack of books. I also have friend recommendations. They say you should really check her out or him out, because it's, you know, LGBT. And I have had recommendations for gay authors and trans authors. It's really exciting how many good books are out there if you look. So any final thoughts? Let's go around one more time on plans for the future, or what you're most excited about now, or doesn't even necessarily have to do with books.
What I'm most excited about now is a chance to appear on the radio here. I was just been geeked all day since she said, yeah, let's do this afternoon. You know, Sandra was a big influence on me deciding to go from, geez, I'd like to write something sometime, maybe off in the future, into actually putting, well, not pen to paper because that's so old school, but fingers to keyboard, you know, actually completing something. So I'm excited to move beyond, I think, the short stories, which is what I do now. I like a short story because you gotta capture an entire arc in 2,500 words and really make it about something, which is a challenge. But I want to see if I can stretch that out a little bit and do a novel. So I'm working on that now, and that's what I'm excited about.
I think where I'm at is I'm really excited to get the next two books out, because going in a little different direction, taking it up a notch. As an indie, you know, the worst thing we can do is have bad editing. And I think I had some struggles, definitely, first, had made some mistakes and all that. And I'm excited about taking that to the next level, because I don't want that to ever be a reason for, you know, if you don't like my story, I can take that. But if it's something I could control, it doesn't work so well for me. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to get those two out. I'm excited about Women's Week, Boston, or no, where are we going? P-Town, right. That gay place. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. We're landing in Boston. So the party starts there and then moving. So that's exciting to reconnect and meet some, you know, reconnect with some people and have some and meet some new people and experience that.
I'm excited. Next week is the Bold Strokes books, the retreat, big retreat up in New York. So I'm headed there on Tuesday. No air conditioning, no screens for bugs, no locks on the doors. It'll be really rustic, but apparently it's very inspiring. So I am looking forward to having some time out, time away, and write.
Do all the other authors who are hoping to write know that you're coming?
Yes. Yes. Here's the fun thing. They actually put me upstairs and in a corner. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but I have a list of everybody's room numbers and who's staying there. So I know where Melissa Braden is. I know where Carson Tate is. I know where Fiona Riley is. So I've got this. It'll be a fun time, I think. And then after that, and after I get done with edits for Forget Me Not, I'd like to have maybe a month break, because I've been writing nonstop. And I need a break.
And I have to admit that one of the things that's exciting for me, I've been in the world of music and film. Going back to literature, I'm exploring genres I don't normally read. So right now I'm looking at thrillers, I'm looking at sci-fi, I'm looking at historical fiction, and doing a lot of reading. I'm going to reread Michael Cunningham's The Hours at the end of the year, a book I dearly love. And Liz Hodge is going to be on that panel. Lori Egan is going to be on it. And we're going to do Sandra Moran's Letters Never Sent in November, which is going to be exciting. So looking forward to next year and what books will be out there. Want to thank you all for being on the show. KB and Chris, you've been on before. And Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoy it.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
And this is Elizabeth. Thank you for listening to The Tenth Voice. You still have time to read Anne McMahon's Backcast, which will be featured on the book club show August 13th with panelists Anne McMahon, Kate Lynch, Bev Prescott, and Jeff Vinson. That's going to be a great show. Appreciate your listening. You are listening right now to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.